the work must be worthy. It must be intrinsically satisfying. Now, sometimes the intrinsic satisfactions can be overrun because I'm not used to working and I don't want to work and have to do something I don't want to do, which inhibits my enjoyment of the intrinsic satisfactions until I get used to working and those natural resistance starts to erode. Then I can start to enjoy the natural satisfactions of working hard and seeing the fruits of my labor. But it's a sad thing when a child at 5 years old arrives and has never done a chore, has never broken a sweat. It's even a greater tragedy when a 28-year-old has never broken a sweat, has never learned to work hard for the satisfaction of working hard. Only works for extrinsic rewards. I'll work so I can make money, so that I can go entertain myself. That's a very sad life. And unfortunately, so much of what's done in many school systems around extrinsic rewards really contaminates the atmosphere, really undermines the true satisfactions of knowing and the satisfaction of work well done. That's actually very, very important, how our atmospheres get contaminated. They can get contaminated not only by teacher anxiety, but by the use of artificial rewards and incentives, which demean the joy of knowing, and they demean the student's capacity for intrinsic motivation. One example is the Fun Fridays that we know of some schools that have had. Think of a large Christian school. Every Friday, if the worksheets are all done and the math assessments were satisfactory and everybody's got their homework turned in, then we can have Fun Friday. And what Fun Friday is pizza and a movie. Now, that's devastating to the atmosphere. You say, what's wrong with pizza and a movie? Nothing's wrong with pizza and a movie. I would enjoy periodically, Mary Ellen and I enjoy pizza and a movie together. We're not saying pizza and a movie is intrinsically evil. But when you set that up as we get Fun Friday, if we get through the drudgery of the salt mines Monday through Thursday and half a Friday, then we get Fun Friday. What the adults are saying to every child, you couldn't possibly enjoy history, possibly enjoy literature, find great satisfaction in mastering number and learning to write well. We know that you're just doing that for us because we say you have to, and because we're so thankful that you've put up with this for 4.5 days, we're going to give you what life is really about, and life is really about pizza and a movie. That's the good stuff. So put up with the drudgery of math, science, history, and literature, and Bible for 4.5 days, then you'll get the good stuff. That's the message that's in the atmosphere when we do these sorts of things. And that's hugely destructive. Even if well-intended, if we give a candy, piece of candy, which, again, we know of this happening, where in certain classrooms where every time a child gives a right answer, he or she gets a piece of candy from the teacher. The subtext, there's always a text and a subtext. The subtext is you wouldn't possibly be willing to apply your mind to this material on your own unless I gave you candy. And that's what the teacher is screaming to every child in her class. So the child says, okay, great, I get candy. I get a kind of a pleasure, a satisfaction out of this piece of candy. So, all right, I wouldn't like it. You're saying I wouldn't like it apart from this? I believe you. And so all too often, teachers appeal to the more base things rather than the higher things in a well-intended but misguided manipulation of children, and manipulation of children's affections, actually.
We have a very noble job before us, and so we care about the way we act, and we care about the way we behave and the kinds of things that we do so that we can lead the children. Now, we're not too much with our students in that we're telling them all manner of books to read and all manner of places to go. So we are about setting their affections, and so we set their affections by cultivating tastes. And so we cultivate taste by giving what is best in literature, what is best in music, what is best in art. And we see our students who have already engaged in the culture by being a part of it and their home and their community. And I don't necessarily mean in deliberate ways, but they're aware of the culture. And so we don't need to engage in the popular culture. So we engage in a more traditional culture of giving them the best that is out there in the different things that I had stated. And so our students are put before that, and they delight in it. They develop into having these deeply satisfying relationships. And it's exciting to see them grow in those different and varied ways as they engage in this way of learning.
Another one of the powers of atmosphere is it gives us a sense of what's appropriate and what's possible and how we ought to live, what we ought to be doing. One area in which that's particularly relevant is the nature of work. Is work normal? Or is work just something we put up with until we can get the good stuff, which is entertainment? Is work satisfying? Is it okay to sweat? Is sweat normal? Or is sweat bad? You know, we often forget that work was given by God before the fall. Work is not a punishment. Work is part of the normal human condition. The atmosphere, the way in which work is talked about, the way in which work is engaged, that will communicate everything to a child about how they will relate and should relate to work. So in a place where hard work is normal, children come to the sense, okay, hard work is normal. In a place where sweat is part of life, and when staying on task, even when head and hand are tired, is a good thing, a noble thing, it's what we ought to do, and that's what we all do here, children say, okay, didn't know that. Okay, I can do that. I can work hard.
When I think about approaching work today, you know, it's a wonderful thing to engage with young children. And often you see in the home that a child loves to be with the mom when the mom's in the kitchen, or loves to be with the dad while the dad's in the garden. Or if you have a farm, the children love to be right at your heels being with you in doing the adult work. And we see that also with the work of being with children in schooling, is that they love to learn from the teachers before them. And so we work together. And we often instruct in a way that we say work is a good thing. It's a very blessed thing. Often when people think about work today, they think more about entertainment and leisure times than they do times of work. But work, too, is deeply satisfying. So as we teach the young children to work and the five-year-old years in which the child is put before the work before him of picking up and cleaning up, or of writing their sums, or forming their letters, or reading words, and that sometimes it's painstaking, and that how when the hand is tired that the child continues to work. Our students also are involved in real work, doing the work of pruning the garden, the plants around us, and also doing the work of doing the chores in the school. I remember one time when the children were doing the chores, and as it was my habit, I would go throughout the building and shut the lights and make sure the doors were locked. And one of the teachers was standing nearby and had noticed the assembly room floor was still very dirty. And so I began to pick up the mop. And the teacher said to me, "Oh, Mary Ellen, don't do that." And I said, "Oh, it's easier." He said, "No, if it's easier for you, you'll be doing it every day." He said, "The student needs to do it again." And I knew that intellectually, but emotionally, it was easier for me to just pick up the mop and do the work. And so then he encouraged me to go call the parent and ask them to bring the child back to school and to do the work of finishing the job well. So I did indeed do that. And so as I called the parent, and I was grateful for this parent, because this parent was very supportive, and I knew indeed she would bring her son back, and she did, and he began to do the work, and he cleaned the floor as it was intended to be cleaned, and then he went on his merry way, and I felt that was a worthy task for him, and that he had now learned that he should do the job well the first time so he doesn't have to come back and do it the second time, or indeed think that someone else would do the job in his place. And so as we begin to instruct students in approaching work, whether it's with their hand or with their mind, that it's sometimes painstaking, and in the end it is rewarding.
Certain time in the day, they'll pause, they'll spend 10 minutes cleaning up. Some of our schools don't even have full-time janitorial help, because the children actually keep the school in shape. By doing so, they learn to work. They learn to work together, They learn it's okay to work, and they take much better care and responsibility. I'm much less likely to track mud into the classroom if I'm going to be sweeping the floor or my classmate's going to be sweeping and mopping the floor. How do you learn a work ethic? You learn a work ethic by being in a community or an atmosphere where work is normal and work is good, where work is not tyrannizing, where work is satisfying. That's how you learn a good work ethic. You learn it by the atmosphere. You breathe it in.
One of the wonderful things about Charlotte Mason is when she talks about approaching work is that she does not believe in having the student do just work for sake of work, that the work should indeed be worthy. So the things that we're giving them, whether it's to do the work of transcription, where they're copying something or learning how to form letters in handwriting, that it's not necessary for them to do page after page after page, but that they would form maybe 6 letters correctly and they would be done with their work. But see, it's not just forming 6 letters correctly, it's getting in the habit of doing work well, and that there's set work for a set time. And so as they work in the set time, that they do it well and they use the time to do the work and then it's over with. They don't have to redo the work or they don't have to have review work in hopes of having the real work on a test or on a quiz, but that the real work is the work before them. It is the work at hand. And so as seeing children approach work, we've seen them grow to be adults in our schools and go on to college and be the kinds of persons who work well, who know how to finish jobs, who know how to work even when hand and head are tired, and who are able to be governed in themselves and then therefore able to govern others. And it's been very rewarding to see these young people grow up and become parents and to become persons who are contributors in a community and not just consumers.
Now, when we do talk about work in an atmosphere of work, it is critical that the work be worthy work. In other words, it's work that is worth doing. And I must say, mopping the floor is work worth doing, particularly, and a child can experience the difference. It was dirty. I've mopped it. It's now clean. Mary Ellen tells the story of being a second grade teacher, and they had ordered the classroom and cleaned out the desks, and they all lined up and walked out. And as they got to the second to last student got to the door, he turns around and he exclaims, "Our classroom looks so nice." Well, they had completed worthy work, and there was an intrinsic satisfaction that came from that worthy work. When it comes to studying, worksheets that are tedious, that are just fill in the blank, constant repetition, mind-numbing flashcards where I'm just learning data points, the only thing that satisfies about that is, you know, I know more than anybody else. I win the Trivial Pursuit game. There's no real satisfaction, either mental or relational,